Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3, Episode 11 of Mun Clickers, where it's time to click both heads when in 2022. Today, I am joined with, I'm very happy for this guest today, very happy to jump on and have a chat with Dig Nick, RLCS coach for Dignitas. How are you going today, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I'm excited to be on here. I've watched these for, like, ages at this point.
Oh, a long-time viewer, a long-time listener.
We've been talking since, like, season one, man.
We're talking since the beginning, you know, and I think, you know, I talked to you before the show as well, and it was funny because, you know, I was thinking yesterday, like, I had a bit of a flashback to the time where I was trying to, you know, I think there was early days of Renegades, and I was looking to get some, I guess, Rocket League guests on. I was thinking, who can I get on? And, you know, I came across yourself, and then we had a chat about sort of what we can do for Mind Clickers, and that obviously led to having Jack on as well. And now we've almost come full circle because now you're obviously coaching Jack. So it's funny how that works, doesn't it?
Yeah. At that point, I only recommended Jack because I knew he liked to just talk on podcasts, and we had a few, like, small conversation, but Jack and I weren't really like friends at that time. But I was like, hey, I've given this dude two or three sentences, I'll just pass them on to you, see what happens. It works, if it doesn't, oh well, I tried my best.
That's it. But it worked well, it worked good. And I guess we've come, you know, as I said, full circle. You know, I've had Jojo on, I've had Greg on from Rocket League, and I've got some more, I guess, Rocket League coaches lined up. So it feels like I'm almost turning into a Rocket League podcast, but I don't think I am that far yet. So we'll see how we go in that regard. But I'm very excited today to, I guess, learn a little bit more, I guess, about your past history, because I don't think we've had a chat about that too much. And I'm keen to know, I guess, what you did before, you know, Rocket League, if there was a time before Rocket League, and I guess your mindset on a few topics, you know, that we kind of share as a coach. Because I think, you know, a lot of coaches sometimes butt heads about things. A lot of coaches agree about things. So I'm really interested to see where you stand on a few different things, which is going to be cool.
Yes, sir.
All righty. So I guess what we always do, and I'm sure you know about it, we always do the intro arc on Mind Clickers. So I guess take us back. Where did it all start, I guess, within esports, or, you know, your interest in gaming, or where does it all stem from?
With gaming, it started with FIFA, I want to say.
Oh,
no,
okay.
It started with Mario. I only got into FIFA because my dad forced me to buy FIFA 2010 World Cup South Africa instead of Super Mario Galaxy when I was trading in other Wii games. That's the only reason I ever got into, like, soccer and FIFA in general. So that was my first, like, actual game I played.
Yeah.
5 years later of FIFA, and pretty much only FIFA, Rocket League came out. And that was free on PlayStation. That's the only reason I got it. So all my FIFA friends forced me to buy it. I was like, hey, there's this new game. We're all going to play it. So now you have to play it. And it's like, all right, well, I don't have much of a choice here. So I guess we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got into Rocket League. But it was only because I wanted a balance from, like, trying to full grind FIFA and get really good at FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with FIFA was, like, I don't know if you've ever played, like, any EA game or any sports game, you can only control one player, so it sucks.
Yeah,
it's just awful. You're just relying on the AI 90% of the time. So I quit FIFA. I hated it. I think it was FIFA 17 or 18. I was done.
Okay.
So then I, like, fully converted into just only playing Rocket League.
Mm-hmm.
And then this was also when I was doing coaching and managing with my soccer team, like my high school team, because I was a soccer player.
Mm.
And then I realized, all right, yeah, I'm not good enough to get a college scholarship. I'm not the best player. Let me go into managing and coaching because I like the backside of the game and I like understanding stuff.
Yeah.
That's how my mind works, is I want to understand everything. I don't want to just get an answer. I want to know the how and the why and where it all came from. And I guess that kind of goes with my personality because I think I have quite a, maybe not obsessive personality, but addictive, where as soon as I care about something, I want to know everything about it.
Mm.
So that's where it was with soccer or football. And then eventually it turned into Rocket League with playing. Gave that a shot for 2 years. I wasn't good enough. It was like B+.
Okay.
And my friend gave me a shot coaching and working with his team, which was, oh God, what was the name of the old team? It became Team Meteor. It was whatever team was before that. That was with Adam, because Adam is someone who I ended up learning lived like 10 minutes from me.
Which was even crazier.
Yeah, I had only known him online, but he was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, we both, like, live at the same place. Wow. All right, and that's how my coaching career started, was off of that, where it was more just a friend thing. I was helping out, and it worked out really, really well for us.
Interesting. I like that. I think that, funnily enough, I feel like a lot of people started in FIFA or started in some sort of sporting game and then transitioned into Rocket League. I feel like I've heard that story a few times.
It's just because, like, it's soccer into soccer, but it was better, you know?
and I guess I love to sort of reflect back, you know, obviously when you picked up Rocket League for the first time, did you ever envision that you would be, I guess, in that competitive scene where you are now?
Nah, man. I still remember, like, me and my friends trying to grind for, like, plat. Like, and, like, my friend's promo game, and I played Batmobile, and I threw.
Oh, hey. And he got mad at
me. I thought I was cucked, sir. It didn't happen.
Oh, well, at least you gave it a crack, though, right?
Better to have tried and failed than to never have tried at all, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so obviously you started coaching a little bit. You started getting a bit of a tease for it. When did you feel that, like, you knew that, oh, yeah, this is something I really like, this is something I really enjoy?
Probably Fusion. Do you remember that, Tony? Were you even in the scene, though?
No, I started 2021. Yeah, I was in, like, 2021 early, yeah.
This was mid-2020, early 2020.
Okay.
This was with Adam, Kiri, and Austin. Because originally it was me, Adam, Hockey, Kiri. And then we kicked Hockey, which is kind of funny because I ended up coaching him later in my career. And we're still really, really good friends.
Yeah.
Hockey was always supposed to be my, like, protege, all my friend group said, because we used to always watch replays together for hours.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, but it started off with me kicking him. Me and Adam basically kicking him. So that's what we felt was best for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then we beat Cloud9 in Fusion because we got carried by Sharp,
right?
Who is a ones player. And I guess it's more relevant now because the Gaming Without Borders tourney has brought back Fusion. If you had a good ones player, you actually just won series.
Yeah.
We scammed a threes game against Cloud9 and then we just won 2-1s game and it was over. Unreal how we did that. I think it was on CJ's channel as well, which made it even better.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, because he was one of the streamers. And then we got to the qual match. We lost to SSG, which happens. SSG were demons in that tourney. And then we ended up losing to Vision, which was Beast Mode, Kinsei, Rodoko, which, looking back, that team was gross.
Yeah.
Beast Mode and Kinsei on the same roster.
That's pretty sick. Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Go next. And for a team who had no experience or, like, no real, the closest they had got was one series off our LRS. Like, we were making good progress. We also had, what was it, spring series, I think? We got top 20. Top 20, top 16, something like that. I know we beat Zookeepers and now Accelerate. And that was, like, the first time they ever did it. And, like, I'm sure you experience as well. The more you play in tournaments and the more you're there, it's like, damn. Once I get that taste of winning, like, I don't want this to ever go away.
Yeah.
It's like a
drug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I was like, man, I want to keep winning. This was fun.
Yeah. I think it's weird for me because I think when I look back, like, I never had the intention of, I guess, getting into Rocket League. Like, I was previously coaching a little bit of StarCraft. I was chatting with some guys about COD and stuff like that. But I guess Rocket League was that game that I just jumped on with the guys and sort of, you know, at the time I was a mouse and keyboard player. And I was like, and they were telling me to get it. They were like, get a controller. You'll be 10 times better. And I'm like, nah, I'm not spending $25 on a controller for a game. I'm never going to play again. But it's funny how things go full circle, isn't it? And now I've got multiple controllers. But yeah, it's just weird. Like, I never thought about it. And I guess, you know, obviously the way that I got into it was a very fortunate way. But yeah, I definitely agree that once you get that taste of whether it be winning, I bet your first best of seven OT or whether you win your first, like, you know, you make it to Championship Sunday. It's that weird feeling and it's like you don't want it to – you want to continually be in that feeling.
Just ride that high.
So I definitely feel that with you for sure. But, yeah, I guess that's also interesting because obviously things can't always be like that, right? We're going to have those downfalls. We're going to have that upsets. We're going to have those times where things don't go our way. Did you have that much as a coach back then and you know, the way you handled things back then, is that sort of the same that you do now or has that changed over time?
Back then, I think I – can I swear on here? No.
Yes, you're fine.
Okay. I definitely didn't have any balls back then.
Right.
That sounded swearing, but it was the same thing. Where it was more just like, yeah, where it was more just like trying to be a supportive person mm-hmm. and help. It wasn't until like Crimson Wings where I really started like doing full on coaching.
Yep. Okay.
But it also helped like when I was first starting out, like we were a team with no expectations. Like we were a team most people expected to be like top 32 and we were a consistent top 20. We were dominating weeklies. So it was a really good team. And then we all got opportunities and then left, which was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, which, you know, that's what happens in the bubble scene. One person gets a tryout and then it's like, okay, now I'm going to take a tryout because I don't know if that person's going to leave.
Leave
like,
or not. Oh,
now I have to explore other opportunities because both my players are trying out with other teams. It's like, well, damn. Mm,
yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. I feel like in a way it's sort of like, I understand it, but it's also like you sort of think about it like, what if this team stuck together for an extra, you know, an extra couple of months? Like, could there have been a lot more potential? Could we have reached a new level sort of thing? Does that ever cross your mind? I guess about then.
Literally, that's literally queso.
Yeah, literally.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, Vatira and Joyo both had the offer from Guild after the first split, which I think I can say because they made the roster move anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yep.
They both had that. They both turned it down. And Ryze had the Giants offer, which, looking back, fair play to him for turning that down. Because obviously we were, like, the better team at the time. But even still, they were on, like, five times our sell.
Yeah.
At queso. They were on unreal money. And, like, for a younger player, like, man, I don't know if I personally would have been the person who's like, yeah, let me turn that down.
Mm.
When we were, like, a top 10, lower top 10 team, it's like, okay, we had the potential, which obviously we saw in the winter, but even still, fair play to them.
Yeah.
To have that, like, restraint and to trust what we were doing so much, because, man, when I was 15, 16, I was stupid. Like, I probably would have taken it. Just, like, at the end of the day, like, it's a life-changing amount of money.
Yeah.
Especially in esports. Did you end up seeing the Shaq video that came out today?
I did.
Where he's like,
what's that one?
It was just basically like esports athletes have like a 5-6 year shelf life. So like they're mm-hmm. athletes in his opinion, like he has mad respect for them. Cause man, it's a true fact. Like how many pros get cycled out after like 3-4 years?
Yeah. We talk about it all the time, don't we?
Awful, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, it's one of those things where to you can make comparisons and contrasts between esports players and esports athletes and traditional sports athletes, and you're always going to have that same old, esports athletes aren't actually using any physical, you know, aspects towards, you know, who they are as an athlete. And, you know, they've got all these sorts of rebuttals, but at the end of the day, you know, you look at a traditional sporting team and they have how many players on a team? They have 10, 12, 15 players. On an esports team, you've got 3 for Rocket League. You've got 5 for League of Legends, CSGO. So the competitiveness to be on a team and actually to sort of understand, is this the right team for me, I think is a very hard thing to sort of deal with. And it's a very hard thing. Like, you know, that's why I have that, you know, sort of respect for, I guess, the boys when they were sort of acknowledging, hey, you know, we've got this great offer, you know, and that's really tempting. But I guess they stuck it through and they saw it through to the end. And obviously that sort of paid off for them. But I think it's hard because I think I agree with you. I think a lot of people would take that extra offer because, like, oh, you know, this is a level up. This is an upgrade. This is almost an augment on what I've been doing and working on for so long. So why not go for it?
Yeah, and it's also just, okay, maybe it hasn't quite worked out. Let's give it a chance.
Mm.
It's also like, I don't know. I think the other example, like this season, has probably been Almid, if you've heard of them.
Yep.
Yeah, where obviously they just qualified for Saudi Arabia as well. Mm-hmm. But that was a team that they didn't make it out of day 2 of qualifiers, the first 5 events, and then they made 3 like main events in a row until the last one. And then they made Saudi Arabia. Crazy. I don't know how many teams would have actually stuck that out. Like, that was unreal that they care that much. Like, you have to be a different type of person to really trust and believe that much.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe it's age plays into it as well. Just because it's all younger kids. And I mean, I said I was dumb when I was young. There's obviously certain pros that are like, when they're young, they're just different. Like, their maturity level is unreal. Like, it was Joya.
Mm.
Joya, when he came into the scene, his maturity level was unreal. Like, his dedication to work, his trust and his ability, he was just different, man.
Mm.
But Crazy. I think that plagues esports more than traditional sports just because of the age.
Yeah, the age. And I think the age of you know, we're seeing a lot more esports pros be a lot younger. You know, we're seeing them in the 15-year-old, you know, age bracket, 16-year-old, just absolutely dominating. And I think that only just creates more motivation for the guys that are 13, 14, right? To think, hey, you know, they're a few years older than me. Why can't I do that? And a lot of those guys at the time, what, 15, what's that, grade like 8 over here, grade 9, they've got that extra bit of free time to, I guess, put into a passion project like esports or, you know, really give it that red hot crack. Whereas, you know, you look at a 22, 23-year-old or somewhere around there and it's like, well, you know, do I have enough time to really invest into this?
I always wondered that just because I feel like if you're going from the start, okay, maybe if you're 22, 23, you can't, but
yeah,
I don't know. I watched a documentary on Hiko the other day.
Oh, I think I've seen that same documentary.
Esports?
Yeah, it's a good
it's
one.
Good. They have so many good documentaries. I've been getting to CS. I like CS.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he gave it all. He quit. He dropped out of college at like 22, 23.
Mm-hmm.
But that's much more of an exception rather than a rule. But I think it's possible if you still have the passion and you're already in it to still continue.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. Man, I want to see in 5 years if like the age range is like 4 or 5 years higher. Players like Garrett aren't just going to fall out of meta. Players like Justin, Squishy, the older Nap, Chicago, like they're not just going to drop off because they hit 24. It's like...
Yeah. Turbo. Yeah. It's going to be crazy. Because you look at CS, I think the average age of CS players is like 25, 26. Like I look at FaZe, some of those guys on the FaZe team that just won the major, I think Carrigan or just Rain 30, is like 32. Yeah.
But yeah, CS has been around 20 years. Rocket League's been around.
What, that's true.
Six, five, give or take. Jesus, 7 years, I think. Unreal. But that's what I mean. CS has been around for 20, 25 years. Rocket League has not had that chance to grow and develop.
Do you think Rocket League will grow and develop into the same level that CS is?
No. Not CS level. I think it can grow and develop a lot more.
Yeah.
I think everyone's waiting on UE5, which I think there's still changes and updates they can make now, even without UE5. That would improve the game and improve everything. But we'll see.
Mm. What is UE5 even going to bring, though? Like, I haven't really read into it or chatted too much about it, though. Do you know much about that?
I think the big thing people are hoping for is just, like, customizable maps and the ability to just create on the game.
Oh,
so, I mean, okay. Rocket League got stale. Or, like, get stale at times, just, like... So it's the same game.
The same thing every single time. Yeah. There's no massive meta changes or patches.
Yeah. Like at least CS, Val, there's different maps. There's different heroes. There's a change, right? It's not just same map, same thing. Like, I probably shouldn't say that actually. Because I know they were talking about changing stuff for next season or trying like stuff in off season tourneys like in different formats.
We'll keep that aside.
I mean, I guess we're seeing that with Saudi Arabia, right?
Yeah. So, that's yeah.
It'll come out, yes.
I guess, yeah, on that topic, Saudi Arabia is a really interesting one because I remember, you know, I remember this distinctively. I remember chatting with Jack and we chatted about how important or how I guess interesting ONCE tournaments would be, or you know, that aspect of having a 1v1 sort of game mode if it was, you know, the crew battle, which sort of is now. But the fact of, you know, sort of developing as a ONCE player initially when you pick up the game and then rotating into a threes player, do you think that ONCE players have a lot more foundation over, I guess, someone who jumps into the game as a threes player and is just constantly always known threes, never touches ONCE?
Individually, yeah. Because ONCE just pushes you mechanically a lot more than threes does. I mean, but that's common sense. A game mode you touch the ball more is always going to be more helpful, right?
Yep.
Like, that's all it is. It's just touches, repetition. It's why, like, pros don't – you don't see a ton of pros, like, grind ones, but they also don't grind threes. All they do is twos.
Twos.
Because you get the space to work. You can play the game, and you get a ton of touches.
No.
It's not just bang ball, one touch, bang ball. You can play on the ball.
Yeah. So I think that's why we're going to see some really interesting, like I'm really interested to see some of the matchups that come out of Saudi as well. Just of, I guess specifically, yeah, the twos and the ones aspect. Just of, I guess, people that I wouldn't have, I guess, been able to imagine seeing them 1v1 against, or, you know, have twos against. It's going to be really interesting.
Saudi's weird. The only thing I don't like about Saudi is you could have used a sub in qualifiers, but the sub can't come to LAN.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find so weird that you can only bring... I don't know. Maybe because that was exploited like hell in Fusion.
Oh,
I know, because we did it. Yeah.
Right.
Teams would just pick up ones mains and be like, yo, play ones. That's it.
Oh, go enjoy. Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we did. So it works, but well, it's boring.
Didn't All Mid do that? Didn't they pick up a ones player?
They picked up Chronic on the pure fact he was supposed to play the lower qualifiers at day one.
Right.
I think. Or no, the lower bracket of day two.
Mm-hmm.
He had to play something because Angel at finals.
Oh, like okay.
it wasn't a play ones. It was just because he was best friends with Flitz and they needed a sub.
They needed someone to pop in. Yeah, I gotcha.
And then I was like, "Hey, Gronik, we're in lower bracket. You want to play twos and ones? Because you're the best out of us in it. But if we make it, it'd only be if we can fly you out. You're not guaranteed."
Mm.
Which is fair. I mean, that's kind of expected when it's with your team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Saudi's definitely an interesting one. I wonder if, I'm wondering if there's going to be, because I know that obviously there's NA and EU, I'm wondering to see if we're going to see any of these OCE teams or if we're going to see any of these SAM teams making an appearance. It's going to be really interesting because I think that would stir the pot a little bit as well, getting some of those guys who maybe spend a bit more time in ones or twos out there and sort of testing them against the big dogs. That'd be interesting.
Man, imagine Furia. Okay, it would be demons.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Yan Carda, go next.
But I mean, I'm also. Do you think that Falcons is going to just come out and sort of have that sort of home turf advantage of being on in that sort of area?
I don't know if it's home turf advantage. More so, just like, I mean, that team's dumb lands. So is Veloce. So is 0-1. Like, there's so many lands in Saudi Arabia. I don't think.
Yeah.
But maybe for the younger teams, like the lower Saudi teams, it'll kind of help, like, having the culture there.
Mm-hmm.
But the big dogs, like, they've been to – they were there at Sweden. They should have been at LA. Like, it's just
– just another one for them.
Yeah.
That's it.
Be really good, though. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah. That was sick watching them in Sweden, so I can't wait to see what they bring out in Saudi. And Worlds as well, I guess, so – but
man, I hope Veloce make Worlds. I want to see my boys there because I helped them for regional one.
Oh, did you?
When I wasn't locked with Dig, and I didn't know if I had the Dig spot yet. So that's who I would have went with.
All right, gotcha. It's so interesting seeing. I guess that aspect of from the ground up, you know, spending a lot of time within, I guess, the bubble scene, and then obviously going to Magnolia, then going to Queso, then now arriving at Dig. It's, I guess, I'll leave that to the end, actually. That's sort of an end question. But what I want is, I guess, your perspective, I guess, when you were on Queso and you were starting to make momentum, you're starting to push through the EU regionals, you're starting to get a few dumps, you know, what was the mindset then? Was it just, let's just keep doing our game, let's just play our game, let's just, you know, let's not change anything? What was that thought process?
I think I want to say it was Rise that said it, like the first day of scrims back after regional one. It was like you kind of just had that aura about you, like, man, we're the kings of Europe. Like, we did it, right? And like genuinely that ego boost of, okay, you can tell yourself, man, we, like, in split one, right? I remember this set pissed me off. Six of our nine losses were to the major teams and the top three teams in Europe, which were BDS, Dig, and Endpoint.
Uh-huh.
So that was annoying. Six of your nine losses are to the top one, two, and three seed.
Yep.
Okay, that's on us then to break through. And then the other one was regional two, where we were having internal problems, but we sorted that out for regional three.
Nice.
So it was like, man. But the thing is, in split one, we went 1-8. I want to say in game fives in main event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, damn, we win three of those. Three of those were in Sweden over Vitality.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, that could have been us. And it was that close, but we never, like, we could always tell ourselves we could do it, but we hadn't done it, right? And there's that difference of saying you can do it and actually doing it. But the one game five win we got was in regional three, and it was against Misfits. And that was the first time we had won a game five in a main event. And it was like, okay, now we've done it. We can do it.
Yeah.
And then you saw the streak, and it's a streak even now. They're like, they are demons in game five, game seven. So just don't face them there. Because they just win. They have that confidence. It was always, we can drag a team a full series.
Yeah.
But we didn't have the ice. And once you win like two or three in a row, it's like, all right, it's just another game for us.
Mm.
And I think that also goes into the mental of other teams, like, especially at LAN, where we had that like unreal game seven record. And it's like,
yeah.
Well, now we got to face them in game seven. Yeah. And it's like, dude, now what?
You've got that small advantage over them, right?
Yeah, it's just a mental gap. Mm-hmm. Like, I always watched other players' cameras because I found it interesting. It was easy to tell how people would react.
So did I. Love that. Yep.
Because you can play on it, right? If someone looks angry or they look frustrated, you'll be able to tell in their gameplay 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It's just that reassurance.
Mm. And what was it like, I guess, before LA, had you been to any other LAN event, or I guess any other games or any stuff?
I've been to Jersey for Worlds in season seven, I think. That was unreal. That was the one Vitality one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny, like, meeting a lot of the people that I'm still friends with today, or actually I have it on my desk. What I have my got? Controller signed by all the pros.
Oh,
let's see who we got in here. We got Justin, Sunless, Ronicky, Cassio, Rizzo.
Dang.
Who is that? I have no clue. Bluey, Fruity, Chaussette, Chrome. Oh, to me, Chrome was great. Fairy Peak, K-Dub, Torment, Fire, Violent Panda, Squish. Like, all these players, right?
Jeez, how many can you fit on one controller? That's a lot.
Mate, it is absolutely filled.
Oh, my. Is that like the show controller? You never use that now?
Yeah. No. It already had a broken button, so... I had stick drift, but it's never getting used anyway. But
I gotcha.
I always keep that on my desk as a reminder. It's just wild.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because I guess back then you were a spectator, but now you're up there right down the front in front of everyone. How did that feel?
Different. So different.
Yeah.
Like the first night at the hotel, I was nervous, man. Like, meeting people. I was like, man, I know you guys. Like,
yeah.
Like, I remember I ran into Rizzo because we were both trying to get on the elevator, and I had no idea how to start a conversation because I knew no one knew who I was. So I was like, hey, man, you're Rizzo, right? And it's like, yeah, I fucking obviously know who you are, but it's like, how do I start a combo? It is what it is.
Yeah. Dang. I remember I ran into Garrett in the elevator. And I literally cannot remember a single word I said to him, but we had a full-blown conversation. Cannot remember a single word I said. But I think it was just like, oh, hey, I mean, Garrett, it's just me and Garrett in the elevator. What do I say? And so I just, yeah.
But, it's so weird.
But yeah. But I guess if I reflect back, like, I remember when you boys came out, like, you had that confidence. You know, you know, you were walking around, you were sort of enjoying it, and you were sort of enjoying the moment. And I think that's one of the best things you can do at LAN. And I think that sort of just helps with that confidence because, you know, I guess I haven't experienced it yet, but... you know, what it's like looking out into a massive crowd, and I can only imagine what that is for a player. But what was that like for you?
Kind of nice, because no one was rooting for us, so I feel like we had, like, no expectations or pressure besides pressure we put on ourselves.
Yep.
But we also were like, okay, we trolled day one, so it was already, like, pretty much impossible for us to win the LAN, which sucks. That's the worst part about bracket reset and, like, how mm-hmm. it's ran. On LAN, you get 5-minute breaks because it's 10-minute breaks, but it's okay. It's 3 minutes once you're actually off the stage, 3 minutes to walk to your practice room, 2 minutes to walk back. And it's like, okay, so I got 2 minutes really as a break. It's a break. It's awful. that was my biggest frustration with Psyonix, and I told them that because I told them before the SSG series, no matter who wins, we need an actual 20-minute break.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like show must go on. It's like, yeah, it's. That's how you, like, burn out your players because we hadn't eaten at all.
100%.
Like, and we got there at 8 a.m. and it's like, dude, just give us a little break, please.
Yeah, 100%. We're talking about
the crowd. Yeah, we had no pressure or expectations. It was just like, let's play. Let's see how we can do. Let's use this as a learning event. Yeah, like, have fun with it. Because we were, like, the real pushers of the have fun meta. Also, Ryze completely made, like, an unreal call to throw Joyo in the middle
mm-hmm.
because I was kind of, they were Ryze and the tier were the ones fighting over who should be in the middle between each other.
Yep.
And then obviously Joya was not the most confident day one, so we threw him in the middle. So the other two could kind of surround him, like very similar to what SSG did with Daniel.
Yep.
So first of all, fair play for Ryze getting that right, and then Vatira for accepting it and just saying, put Joya in the middle, let him do what he wants, be confident. And it worked because we beat FaZe. And we were always using that day two as a test day. If it worked, it worked. If it didn't, okay, we played endpoint instead of NRG and lower. So at the end of the day, you got to beat who you got to beat, right? Yep.
Yeah.
It's funny. I remember after that FaZe series, AJ was like, at least we don't have to play NRG. But that meant we got to avoid BDS in top eight, which BDS had our number. So it's like, okay, we help you, you help us. And then bam, we faced in top four anyway. So yeah, it's like, yeah, it is what it is at that point.
Love that. So that's funny you mentioned that as well, I guess, putting a player in the middle because, you know, we made the decision to put Fever in the middle for Sweden. Because obviously CJ and Kami being, you know, land vets, you know, it was just sort of that. I think we were playing with the idea of, do we have, I think we were in our scrim rooms, in our practice rooms in Sweden, and we had Fever on the left side. CJ was in the middle because we thought, you know, CJ, you know, has that sort of confidence he can allude to Fever on the left side. But I think it was funny enough. I think it was CJ's mum who actually messaged CJ and said, what if we put Fever in the middle? And I was like, yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense because obviously, you know, being the land vets, we can sort of, you know, he can feel a little bit more in control and feel a little bit more comfortable. And then obviously we went on to beat Endpoint day one. So I think that was a massive one for us, just having that sort of bit of confidence to sort of take advantage of the situation and that we can easily manipulate. But I think it's a big one. And I see that J-Cube's in the chat, who's actually, if you don't know J-Cube's, actually an intern for the Renegades. He's actually going to Sierra Worlds for Oakland. So he'll be up there on stage. So I definitely know that he'll love this convo that we're having now, just taking a bit of different pieces, taking your perspective. Oh, we've got Bass in here as well. Love that. But I think one of the interesting ones that I want to touch on, because I think about it myself, is finding the sweet spot of comms as a coach. And I guess, you know, some coaches are really enthusiastic with comms, whether it be, you know, post-game or in between rounds. And obviously, you know, you've got a bit of experience with this, obviously going between games at the major, you know, being, you know, going from top eight, top four, to obviously going a top two. Where do you find that sweet spot? How do you know when to tell, you know, say a bit more? When do you know when to lay off? What is it from your perspective that gives you that little bit of a hint?
When we were having a lot of success, the main thing I was doing was facilitating. Because we kind of had an issue in the first split when people would try and relay information. It wouldn't be in a constructive way. It'd be more in a destructive way. Yep. So that's where I would have. I was also doing a lot more coaching in the first split where I was trying to do too much. And I mean, how old are you?
Oh, mate. I don't know if you want to know that. I am 25.
Yeah, so you're normal for an esports coach. You're like, I swear every other coach is like this 23 to like 27, right? Mm. I'm the young kid. I turned 20 after we left LA.
Oh, like okay. So you are young. Yeah, okay.
And it's something I mentioned with Dig when I was like first going through the interview process with them. Like, I'm going to make mistakes. I'm younger. I don't have that maturity per se.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be with experience or just as a person, I make stupid mistakes. But I also kind of have that youthfulness and I think differently, I think. But it was more just how could I not say too much, whereas I used to overdo it. And I think that's probably a huge mistake. Well, it was a huge mistake because I try and overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a hard thing as a like new young coach because you haven't like – because coaches don't talk to each other at all, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had my first like full conversation about like ideas and just how we are as people, how we treat our team with Chrome last night. And that was only because we were in different regions. But that's my first time ever sitting and talking with a coach. Maybe Eclipse, that was more me listening than me talking.
Mm-hmm.
And that once again comes down to experience. And it's like, I don't know. I definitely overdid it a lot more than I try to now. I try to be a lot more simple with the Dig guys, especially because they haven't had a coach before. So it's different. It's a full different thing. If you try and overdo it, then they're just going to shut it out from the start. Whereas if you're kind of like easing it in and getting slightly more and more each time, well, it's a lot easier to go from 0 to 1 to 2 to 3 than from nothing to 100 in 1 second. You just can't do it. People can't do it.
Yeah.
That's probably a big thing I'm trying to balance and get right with Dig.
Mm.
I don't know. With Queso is easy because they were always super motivated. It was just getting people to share their honest opinions and share it in a constructive way.
Yeah.
And get them refocused. Like, I know it kind of became a meme, like, watch the fake, watch the Spanish, but it's true because it makes you think. And then once the point that it became a meme, it was kind of like that relaxer, like, okay, we can laugh about it. And with 10 seconds left in a game, if you're laughing, you're relaxed. You're not going to go, okay, maybe I shouldn't go for the ball because I want to defend and play safe. It's like,
yeah,
I'm comfortable. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
We were comfortable. We played well.
Mm, I love that. I love the fact that you brought up facilitating because I think that's a massive one. I think some coaches try to just overcoach, try to look at the situation too in depth. And I guess it works well in my situation because obviously I come from a background with minimal Rocket League experience. So I'm able to sort of just let the boys take the rein because they know best. You know, at the end of the day, they know best. They know what's best for them, specific situations, specific rotations, what work for them, what doesn't. And so I think if I'm unable to have that input of, hey, you know, I think you should rotate this way and pick up this boost to you know, specifically do this, that would be adding to the confusion, I think. So I think being able to facilitate it in much more of a simple way, where you are bringing about the conversations, you're starting the conversation, you're starting the, you know, how did that go? What do you think about that? You're just kickstarting what is essentially providing them with helping them understand it and evoking their own understanding about what went wrong, what went right, why do I need to do this? Why do I need to, you know, sort of have this mindset in a game seven? Then it sort of, you know, almost plants the seeds because then they're able to sort of rephrase that and they look at it back. And, you know, a lot of, you know, what we were doing is like looking back at Sweden, you know, what do we do then? Okay, we did that. Okay, how did we do that? Why did we do that? What can we learn from that? And I think being able to look it back at previous experiences is a big one because, you know, that's how we learn, right? You learn from previous experiences of what went wrong, what went right. And I think you're able to sort of develop that attitude towards what works a little bit more clearer. But it's a big one. And, you know, different coaches do it differently. But I think it's a very interesting one indeed.
The facilitating thing's interesting. I remember there was an interview, I want to say with Garrett and Sizz. Definitely mm-hmm. Garrett. Where it was like, Sizz would throw out ideas and we would sometimes just tell him he was wrong.
Yep.
But it would have that idea of, okay, now we're at least discussing why he's wrong and how we feel.
Exactly.
And like, yep. As a young coach, I was like, man, they disagreed with me. I was like, damn, I'm stupid,
yeah.
But I feel stupid. And it's like, okay, it's not always a bad thing. Like, you can turn bad things into positive experiences to
exactly.
motivate yourself. Mm-hmm. As long as it helps the team, it's all right to be wrong and make mistakes.
Yeah, because one of the big things was I remember I was throwing things out in a scrim once, and I think it was the most basic thing. I was just like, explain this to me. And they're like, what do you mean? How do you not know that? I was like, just explain it to me then. And they're like, oh, okay. And then actually force them to explain it. So they were actually sort of developing that understanding a little bit better themselves. And I think there was one point where I said something and they were like, oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I think we used to do it that way, but we do it this way now. And they sort of develop their own reasoning for what they do. So I think that's a really big one. And I look forward to, I guess, seeing how you go with Dig now that you've got that previous experience from Queso. And I guess, you know, what I just said, you know, you've learned those lessons on what works and what doesn't, which is, you know, only positive, right? We set forward.
Exactly. You live and learn.
That's it, man.
It is what it is at the end of the day.
That's it. That's it. Love that. Now I had an idea of, you know, obviously one of the big ones, and I think it always happens. And I think it's really good for, I guess, Rocket League coaches to, not really Rocket League coaches, but I have a chat with all coaches about this as well, is this sort of dealing with an attitude and a sort of, how can I rephrase that? I think, a lot of people, a lot of coaches, even players even, try and brute force an attitude, whether that be trying to maintain that perfect attitude, trying to deal with whatever it may be and trying to have that absolute perfection about it. And I know that you love to do things, you know, the best that you can. So when things aren't going that way, how do you sort of deal with it? And how do you sort of understand that, hey, no, this is okay. What if I do this? What if I do that?
Just dealing with bad things in general is, and this, maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing. I have quite an addictive personality just in life with whatever I do.
Mm.
So after regional two, the first thing I did was I chilled out for a bit just because I was, I was pissed. I was frustrated.
Yeah.
And then I sat and watched our entire event back. I made like 3 pages of notes just between each series, every single thing I felt.
Mm.
And it wasn't like, okay, we have to fix all these things. That's how I got my ideas out, is I listed the time, I listed my opinion, and I moved on to the next play, the next play. And then I went back the next morning, because also I was sick as hell. So I read some of the stuff back, and I was like, I don't know what I was trying to write there. But I read it back to see if I could understand it properly. Because if I can't understand it properly, they got no chance, right? And then I gave my more broad and general opinions with video, or like with, not videos yet, but like with ideas. And then we went over it as a team. Me personally, is I just force myself into it, more work, and just get it right. Like, I don't want to be that person that's like, okay, I can take a break, reset. Like, no, I dive fully into it and I go, okay, we are fixing this now and we are going to fix it. It's not like we can put it off. It's like, I also think I'm quite a confrontational person, good or bad.
Yeah.
That's something it didn't really work well with Queso. Not necessarily with the players, but with the organization about things.
Gotcha.
Where, I don't know, maybe that's cultural, American versus Spanish, because Americans are kind of known to be assholes. But I don't know. I'm quite a confrontational person, so I give my opinion, whether it's right or wrong, and sometimes wrongly. Right? Mm-hmm. But I do give that emotion. I do give my honest opinions on things, where I just want things fixed. I want things fixed usually in my way. I will listen to other people, but as soon as their way I don't feel like is right or it hasn't been working, that's where I tend to take more of the reins. When things aren't going well, I mean, you can look at us now. It's going shit. Like, there's no point of sugarcoating. We have not been good.
Yep.
Obviously, it plays into it with Regional 1, with Jack's situation, and then that continued into Regional 2.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an issue. Like, all of us had low hours coming into Regional 2, which I take part of responsibility for. But Jack was still mourning, and when one person isn't motivated, it's very easy in a team of three for that to happen. It's something you were talking about earlier, where it's like, it's so different to manage a team of three guys versus 22, like soccer.
Right? Yep.
If one person's not motivating 23, it's like, all right, you can kind of get away with it, right? You can drift under the radar. If it's one pretty person easy. Out of three, man, that's like 8 people in a soccer team.
That's like 33%, man. That's almost 50%.
Yeah, it's awful. It rubs off on others, especially if it's more of a leader like Jack is on our team. It's like we needed to figure it out.
Yeah.
And one thing we made very clear is coming into Regional 3, we won't let it happen again. Like, we cannot let the hours and motivation happen again.
Mm.
If one person's going through hard times, it's on the others to try and help motivate, but also keep themselves aligned, even when the situation sucks.
Because,
man, like, it sucked. Because I'd been with the team one day before Regional 1, literally one day.
Yeah.
And then then that happened. So it all kind of came down to Regional 2 as our first real event together, and it just went awful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It went awful. But can we change it? No. Can we learn from it? Yes. Can we still make London? Hell yeah. So that's all we can do is push.
Yep.
If there's the situation where, okay, we go out, we win Regional 3, but the other three teams get the results they need, that we finish 6, who cares? Genuinely, who cares?
Because
we've shown we can do it. We've made the progress. We know what we can do to win. Right now, like, Regional 3 is more of like a test subject than anything.
Yep.
Let's win. But let's see if we can execute our style properly and how we want to do.
Mm.
So there's no point of just like trying the same thing over and over. We've analyzed, we know what to do, and we just got to do it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I relate to that, man, because I think it's the same thing as yourself. With ourselves, and I know I mentioned this, I think it was, did I mention it earlier in the episode or before we chatted? I guess, you know, we were looking at ourselves and obviously regional two, not the result we wanted. Obviously now we're third, so, you know, obviously for OCE we're a little bit more capped, so we get two spots to a major. So obviously, you know, we're 1 point behind KCP, so literally all we can do is just play a game. And you know, we had a little bit of analysis and we sort of had a bit of a discussion on what works and what doesn't. And I think, you know, sort of what you said, you know, I had a little bit of look back and, you know, just tried to find our style, and we just found that regional two, we just weren't playing our game. We just weren't playing, you know, our game. And I said, I remember distinctively before we went, before the end of Sweden, I literally said the same thing is going to happen for every single player in Sweden. No matter what, no matter who you are, you're going to close your suitcase, you're going to close your hotel door, and you're going to walk out, and you're going to jump on a plane. No way you look at it. Everyone's doing the exact same thing. So we can either do that and be actually a little bit happy with how we performed and feel pretty good about ourselves, knowing that we gave it our all, knowing that we had that red hot crack, or we can just close that door with our head looking down and feeling just, you know, sad, like, you know, what if? What if we tried a little bit better? What if we, you know, experimented? What if we were, you know, fearless? What if we pressured a team like we'd never pressured a team before? And sort of that what if was playing with our minds, like, oh, you know, what if we do that? You know, what if? And literally that's all I wanted. I wanted just them to I guess, you know, meet me out the front of the hotel with our suitcases, and then for them to look at me and say that they gave it their all. That's all I wanted. And then at that moment I knew, righto, you know, this is it. Let's do it. You know, and obviously we had a fantastic land. Obviously didn't go as well in LA, but, you know, we understood what went wrong there, which is, I think, is the best thing to know what went wrong. And now we're looking to hopefully go to London. So, but we'll see how we go. All you can do is try your best, and like literally what you said. At the end of the day, you know, a team has to lose, right?
Exactly.
And that's just one of the things that happens. So all you can do is just give it your all and just see how you go. But it is an interesting one. Yeah.
That's the big thing. As long as you give it your all, it's like, okay, if I half-assed my hours and I came in on like 40, 50 hours for a regional, it's like, okay, did we lose because I was not good enough individually? Was it because I couldn't execute what we wanted to do because of my hours? Or was it, it doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it leaves that, like, the rock unturned, and it's like, what truly works? Because now you just wasted time, because you're going to have to try it again to see if it's one or the other, right? And that's the big thing. As long as you give 110, you put your work in, you tried to do what you tried to do, and you execute it, it's like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, okay, then we know we don't do that again.
Yeah, that's right. What was it like, I guess, experiencing, you know, obviously – I don't know if, you know, I guess you don't have to give the full-fledgedness, but I guess we sort of had a chat about it before. You know, obviously, coming off KSO, you know, a ton of wins back-to-back-to-back to then come into, I guess, your first, you know, almost heavy loss. How did you feel about that personally?
What, against G2 or when I got kicked? When you say heavy loss, which one?
Yeah, maybe, yeah, against G2. I think against G2, because I guess at that point, were you in a position where it's like, no, we've got no expectations. Let's just full-fledge. You know, the G2, it's G2 for God's sake. You know, what was the mindset for you and the boys?
I think the first heavy loss was honestly V1, where it was like, damn, we should never lose to a team like V1. Because they were not as good as us. V1 is not as good as Moist, and I'll stand by that even now.
Yeah, fair
and
point.
I don't think that's that bold of a statement, right? Because, I mean, one got top two at the LAN.
Yeah,
but at the time it was like, man, how do we learn from this? And because we have to learn quick,
mm-hmm.
got really blessed. Day two was a test day. We're going to lowers either way. Because as much as we had faith in the detonator boys, We didn't have that much faith in the detonator for stuff. Man, they were the nicest people in land, though. I love those guys.
Hey, y'all.
I was trying to hype them up before the P1 series. I was like, you guys got this. You win, they then win. Yeah. But even still, right, we used it as a test day. We learned from it.
Uh-huh.
But losing to G2, it was kind of like, okay, we got the bracket reset.
Mm, you knew all they were
the odds were against us. And it's like, and we could have won that, but we didn't. And that's the truth. Could have, but we didn't. And it's like, okay. I remember I told Viteria when after he stopped crying. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. It hurts now, but if we win Worlds, it's all going to feel so much better. And you're going to look at this as like a learning moment or just an experience. It's like, you got to look in the future. This is your first time playing on stage. It was all of our first times, like, actually at a LAN competing. So it's like, whatever happens, happens. Like, we learn from it. We use it as an experience. I know I remember I also talked with Rettles, and that was their big mindset of, we're just going to use this as a preparer for Worlds now.
Yeah.
Like, with Daniel, because obviously it was his first LAN. What works on LAN? What doesn't? We use it as a test subject, which sounds so crazy, and obviously it worked for them as well because they got top three and they were really close to top two. Structurally, I think they were probably better than Queso, but individually, it's just like impossible to stop that team when they're on their grind.
Yeah,
Moist, I mean, that's like, all right, fair enough. But I don't know. I assume they learned a ton from that LAN, and just motivation and everything is like, it's that confidence of going into the next one. And I'm sure it helped in the regional one. They had five straight grand finals, which has only been even come close to by G2 now.
Mm. Yeah.
In the RLCSX era. And it's like, damn, fair play.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But LA was just, obviously it sucked to lose, but we were happy with second. It was like, okay, we know we can beat them. We know we probably are the best team in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't come off on the day, and you can't really fault yourself with that. We had put the hours, we had put the work. Didn't come off. Oh, well. We tried.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. I know that, obviously, you know, you're not coaching Viteria now, but I guarantee you that he's gonna carry that with what you said to him on stage for a long time. Like, that's going to be a massive thing for him. I know it, for sure.
That, or he didn't hear it because of the crowd.
Either way.
He may not remember it, but if not, oh well. But that kid has an unreal future in this game.
Mm.
They all do. They all do. That'll be a fun at Worlds or at London to play them again.
Definitely.
That would be a team I want to play.
Do you think, I know it's a weird thing to sort of think about, but because you've coached them, do you feel like you have an advantage on them?
I mean, the thing with Moist is they were never, like, crazy good structurally.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have, like, not necessarily a play style, but they have a lot of tendencies and consistencies.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, a team like that, like, sometimes you're just going to get out-individualed because of their talent.
Crazy individual mech, yeah.
But also, teams can just win. Like, SSG probably should have taken that series on us.
Yeah.
And I don't think any person in the world would say individually they were more talented than Moist.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably had a better game plan. But sometimes individual talent just wins in this game.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's not as developed as we were talking before the show about like CS and stuff where, okay, you used to be able to get away with super teams. But now it's like, okay, you need the brains and you need to have that structure in the gameplay, which eventually I think Rocket League would go to, but not yet. Still in the infancy.
Yeah, for sure. I think a really interesting one as well is, I guess, after the major, because of, you know, Queso was looked at as, you know, essentially the underdogs by so many people. And I remember, I think it was Joyo, he said, you know, we're just going to have fun. You know, we're just going to go out there, we're going to have fun, we're going to be confident, we're going to have fun. And I think after that, I chatted with a lot of teams, and a lot of teams sort of took that as motivation, you know, sort of adopting the Queso way of just having fun, being confident, and just playing us. Do you think that can sometimes be a harmful thing, looking at other teams and trying to replicate their play style? Or, I guess, you know, if you're, you know, a bubble team looking at a top team, is it okay then to sort of get some ideas about their play style and stuff like that?
It depends how much you do it. I remember we used to watch, like, it was me and Joya mostly. Mm-hmm. We watched, like, the BDS Vitality Championships back in the off season, and we always always these two teams respect each other so much. They don't, like, do anything crazy, and it's like, we're gonna be that scrappy underdog that fucking takes it to these guys. Genuinely, because it was boring Rocket League.
Yeah.
Like, EU last season was not good because no one tried to beat BDS at all. Mm-hmm. And it was boring. It sucked. Taking things from teams is good. Also, looking at teams and going, okay, this is an issue they have, and trying to exploit it, even better. The issue with the have fun meta is you genuinely just need to be really good friends and have that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be a lot of teams where there's either interpersonal issues or maybe just it's not the environment that they thrive in, because some people are locked in. That's it. Don't fist bump me. Don't get hype. We're playing. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't want to laugh. I don't want to joke around. This is serious. I am serious. We win. That's it. And then there's other teams where, obviously, Moises, they have fun. They relax. They enjoy it. They are enjoying themselves, and that's what makes them play better, is because they're just confident, because they feel like they're in a safe, comfortable environment. I don't think it's bad, but you also have to just realize, like, this isn't like a one-size-fits-all. Like, you can't look at one team in any sport and go, man, they just defined everyone.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's positives and negatives, but
if
you're just trying to copy someone, you're always going to be worse than the original.
Yeah.
At least in my eyes.
Yeah, sort of chasing that elusive goal that doesn't exist, almost.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. It's, you can adapt things, right? Because that's every game and that's every sport, is you can take things from people and you can adapt and you can take the best from each thing. But if you just take one thing, it's like, okay, you're just trying to do the exact same thing as someone else.
Mm-hmm.
They're already doing it. They're going to be better at you because they've been doing it for longer.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Dang. Interesting. No, very interesting. Another one that just sort of come to my mind is this whole idea of, I'd be interested if from your take, if I guess Joe or any other boys had it, or maybe even if Dig had it, or maybe we can keep that close on Dig. But this whole idea of placebos. And being locked into one thing. And obviously for Rocket League, one of the biggest ones is car design. You know, banner title, banner choice, banner title, profile photo, all these things that have to be the same. But I think, you know, and I've said this a ton of episodes, and obviously from, you know, traditional sports, I've got so many examples that fit the solution. I think having a placebo can be good and bad. I think it can be good in that it gives you that internal confidence in that you know that everything's okay and you can feel a little bit comfortable. But I think it can be bad if you get too comfortable. And I think there is a very fine line between that. Because obviously if you don't want to change, then, you know, you're sort of restricted. You know, it always must be this way. But then if you lose, or if you lose a massive game, it's like, oh, I lost because I wasn't using the same car design. I wasn't doing this. And then you start focusing on the things that are actually the problem. So what's your take on placebos? Because I'm keen to hear it.
I'm a placebo person. Oh, I remember at LAN, I shaved for day one because I knew I'd be on the camera. I had to make sure I looked good. And then we lost. I was like, oh, well. And then I
didn't shave anymore.
Day two, I just didn't care and I didn't shave. And then we won.
Well, no shave like, yeah. In one day.
No, but you can start to feel like the stubble, like on your face, like it's not smooth, you know? A little bit of what you got going on. What Jack's got going on, that's awful. But nah, my facial hair grows in fast. Like 4 or 5 days, I have like this weird, like patchy, it's bad. So from the last day, it was chalked. I looked awful, but we were winning. So I think my confidence was good. But I don't know. It was something we talked about a lot on Queso, where it was like, if Joya wouldn't feel confident, I'd just tell him to use a car design that he played well in like 2 days ago. And he'd be like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And be confident. I don't know how much it honestly helped him, but he would always seem more confident. But the Dig guys, there's a few placebos, but not as much. The big thing would probably be about Joris. Like, he feels like he only plays good on a certain hour amount.
Right. But, interesting. I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, then get higher than that and see. But don't turn your hours on. Just play the game as much as possible. And I always wondered if it was because his hours were streaky or like, because there's a big difference, at least in my eyes, to playing 10 hours one day, 2 hours the next day, 1 hour the next day, and then nine.
Definitely.
Whereas like 4, 5, 5, 4, 6, right? Where it's the same amount of time, basically.
Yep.
Because you're not burning out and you're also not taking breaks. It's just, I play the game. And I play consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big thing we're trying with him is he also had issues with motivation or just confidence. So I was like, all right, let's figure this out. That was the big thing coming into Diggs. We need to figure out like more of a structure for the team culture and a team environment because it was really poor. But we're working on it, and it's been better. It's been a lot better the last like 2 weeks. Like, mm-hmm. It's been so much better than coming in.
Awesome.
It's coming in, like, I mean, people have heard the comms. They're very awkward. And it's something where now we're more friends. We're hanging out. We're enjoying our time together. We're enjoying scrims.
Mm-hmm.
There's positivity. And when you get that little, like, gleam of hope, that positivity, it's like, man, we can do anything.
Yeah.
Because I trust the guy beside me.
That's it.
I don't know how BDS were so good as they were without Mark being able to communicate. Mm-hmm. So now they've come out. Because I don't know how they wouldn't just turn on someone or they wouldn't have the trust in someone because you don't have that trust if you're not friends.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to be like that great of friends. You just have to be, I respect you. I trust you.
Yeah.
I will look out for you. You look out for me. Simple.
Yeah.
And so then we're really implementing and it's working out pretty well.
Awesome.
Now it's just if we can translate an attorney.
Yeah, for sure. Do you guys play games outside of scrims? Like, do you catch up and, like, we sometimes just, like, getting on Discord and, like, watching a movie together and just, like, doing random things outside of scrims? Or is it very much, righto, now it's scrim time and then I'll catch you boys in the next scrim session sort of thing?
We've done it more, like, the last week. And it's something they never did, like, okay, now it's changed so I can say it or whatever. They never had, like, a team Discord. It was just, they had a group chat, they'd say scrim time, so that's it.
Oh, really?
They wouldn't, like, hang out that much, like, especially last split. Now it's like...
Yep.
I remember, even, was it today or yesterday? I know we scrimmed by 12. I think it was today. We had a scrim at 5 and 6 EST.
Yeah.
Our 5 canceled. All we did was just chat about the most random theories of the world for an hour.
Love
whether
that.
Whether ghosts exist, whether aliens exist, whether they're in this dimension or not. It was just like... If another team listened in and be like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Oh,
well, we get that. Yeah, we do that as well. Love that.
Or even like Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday, it was one of the two. We sat and we watched the qualifiers for Gamers Without Borders together for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So we finished scrim and I was like, man, the series is on. Y'all want to watch this? Yeah, might as well throw the screen share on. It's like, one or two sit in free play, but they're just hanging out. They have that. They're in the conversation if they want to talk, but they're still there just chilling.
Yeah.
And it's a much more healthy team environment. It's good. It's positive.
Mm-hmm.
You're working on it, right? And that's the big thing. You're all committed. Even if you're not doing that much, if you're there, you're committed. It shows you're committed and you care. And that's perfect.
100%. That's massive. I'm so, so glad you touched on that. I think it's a massive one. Just having, even if you're just like kicking back, chilling, doing a bit of free play, at least you're there. And I think, the other two know that, someone else knows that, everyone knows that. And I think that's the most important thing because they're the small things that you sort of reflect back on, you probably reflect back on maybe, 2 months' time. Hey, remember that time we're just randomly talking crap about ghosts? And it'll be just that funny little thing you can sort of all relate to. And I think being able to have that relationship is so important, so important.
Because if you're in a team environment where people don't like each other, they're not going to like the game. They're not going to want to work hard for their dude beside. Because that's also a thing. Like, if you can motivate yourself to go, okay, I want to do it for not just me, but for the team. Like, it's all in for the team. Man, you're going to do well. Because now you remove that selfishness as well. And it's like, man, I will do whatever it takes so we can all succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's just the early stages of developing that key team culture. And then eventually it's just that culture, and that's just the normative. That's just what we do, you know? That's what we do. It is what it is.
Another day in the life.
That's it. Love that. Now, I had a bit of an interesting question that I was thinking of, and I think I was going to say it towards the end, so I think now's the perfect time to sort of start to wind down a bit towards the end. I guess it's obviously way too early to call it. We're in the early days here, Nick. But, you know, looking at maybe 10, 15 years down the line, where do you see it all going? Where do you see the envisionment? What do you picture?
Me? The game? What?
You, where just you, you as an individual.
Oh, shit, dude. If I can still keep doing Rocket League coaching in 15 years, man, I did something right. Right?
That'd be but,
I don't know. I'll probably be out of the RL scene by then. I don't know if RL is going to last 15 years, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially with the way it's going right now. But I don't know. I'm doing college as well. I'm going, but I took this semester off just to focus on Rocket League.
Nice one.
Which, man, that low key worked out because my old school was awful about dealing with me leaving classes for RL or skipping because of tournaments and stuff.
Oh, dang. How was that? That would have been, yeah.
Bad. I remember we had a boot camp in Spain, right?
So
I
left for this a week. Is going to be good. Yeah.
Yeah, this was during the fall semester. I left for a week. I came back. My school then required the what's the COVID test that was not the 15-minute one, the long one. Well, you have to wait like 24 hours.
Oh, what, the PCR?
Isn't the PCR the one you get in like 15 minutes? So?
No, like that's like 2 hours, 90 minutes. Wow. The rapid antigen's like the 15-minute one, isn't it?
It was whatever one took like 24 hours to get back.
Like, okay, so like the full one. Yeah.
Which sucked. And it was so stupid because I had to take a test to leave Spain in general anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had taken the test 24 hours before, but then I had to wait to get another one. And then come back, and they basically told me, like, yeah, even though you're leaving for work, and they had recruited me for esports and for Rocket League in particular. They were like, yeah, if your teachers want to fail you, they can. We're not supporting you at all for leaving to do this. And it's like, y'all brought me here to do this, and I'm working in what I'm studying. And you're like, nah, if we want to fail you, we can. And it's like, dude, thank God I had good grades. Thank God I had good grades. Because if not, I was like, I probably would have failed my last semester, which that's why I left. I was just done.
Yeah.
The new school I'm at, it's much more of like, I'm helping recruit, I'm helping consult, I'm helping grow the program. It's a lot more esports committed people that want to build an esports program rather than a school that just kind of see it as like existing as like a potential moneymaker. It's like, all right, let's commit to this together. And that also means, okay, when I have to leave to go do blah, 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 or whatever, right? They're going to be supportive. They're going to say, all right, yeah, go on, go do that. And eventually it'll probably be a bit more on the managerial side and a bit more of like not coaching, but on the business end of things, which is ideally where I want to transition.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Big, it's a really good spot. I mean, I have a multi-year contract with Dig, which is nice. But also just the connections with Dig is unreal.
Mm.
So they own the New Jersey Devils. They own the 76ers. They own the stadiums. It's like,
y'all. Who's in there?
Okay, if this spell goes well, I can kind of prove I'm good on a company level and on a business side as well as a coaching side. That's how I develop my career in business and specifically sports business. It's just about connections anyway at the end of the day.
Literally.
Maybe that's where I need to learn a bit, because I can definitely be an asshole to some people. And looking back, I've apologized to most of them because, you know, that's where it goes back. I'm stupid. I'm young. I make mistakes, right? And age can't really explain stuff, but it also can to some extent. I'm going to make mistakes. It's just stuff I have to own up for and move on rather than go, let me put that behind me and not learn from it. If I learn from it, I learn from it.
Yeah.
Because I won't make mistakes in the future.
Mm.
But hopefully it's more on the managerial side in business or esports or sports in general. Whatever it is, we'll see.
Love that. Well, I definitely know that for, is it 20 or 21? 20 or 21?
I'm 20. I just turned 20.
Oh, my day. For a 20-year-old, you're looking pretty good for the moment, I think, especially in that position.
Yeah, I've done quite well.
So, yeah, you got to back yourself in, though, you know. That's all you can do. That's all I'm doing. Yeah, that's all you can do. So you back it in. You're backing your skill set. You're backing what you know, and you use that. And that's all you can do, especially within esports. You know, a very competitive field. Some day you're there, some day you're not. So you just got to, I guess, yeah, value every experience that you can.
Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. That's all you got to do. As much as strength, stress that I get, you just got to enjoy it. So
that's what makes life fun is the stresses, though.
It is.
Do you imagine how boring it would be if we were just like, I don't know. That's why I can't take games casual either. Maybe that's the addictive personality.
But yeah.
Man, I can never just hop on a game and be like, all right, let's just have some fun. Nah, I want to win. I play to win. I've never been a play to have fun person. But I don't know. Maybe that's helped me in my career.
Yeah. Well, I tweeted out ages ago. I made a tweet, you know, pressure is privilege. And it really is. You know, some people go through life in just a mundane job, just doing whatever they want to do with zero pressure and zero whatever. And they don't really feel that, or, you know, that burning sensation on their back that they've got to perform or something like that. So pressure's a privilege. I definitely feel like within esports, it definitely is. So
it's easier to motivate yourself and become a better person if you have pressures as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't have anything to wake up for, like what are you waking up for?
Mm-hmm.
Funny I bring up the waking up thing, because what I've told my players is every single night, the next 3 weeks, I want you envisioning one thing. Win Regional 3. Envision that. Mm-hmm. Speak it into existence. Say it. Because guess what? Every morning you're going to wake up and you're going to go, what's the goal today? Be better so we can win Regional 3. That's why I made them start repeating. That's what we're working for. Let's do it. You know, and it's like it gets you excited. It gets you motivated. Because if not, it's like you're just showing up to show up. Showing up just to work sucks. Like I used to do labor, like physical labor as my job.
Oh, yeah.
That was awful. I could not motivate myself any morning ever. Didn't have a passion for it. It was good money. It was like a job, and I'm 16. And it's like, all right, now I have money. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Money doesn't really motivate me. Winning does. So yeah. We're just competition. Whereas a job like that, you don't have competition. You can't really better yourself. It's just, hey, move boxes, fold stuff.
Just rinse, repeat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just boring.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the speciality of esports. Tournaments, LANs, majors. That feeling of when you, I guess, get your ticket at the airport clipped. It's like, right, here's your ticket to wherever. It's like, hang on, where's your ticket to where? Going where? So, you know, that feeling, it's crazy. Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, when you see both of us, we both got a big smile on our face just thinking about it. It's like, oh, I love it, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, let's turn up the gas. Let's wind it down. Now, I've got this question. Everyone, I ask this for everyone. I'm sure you know that. But for all the guys listening, whether they are looking to get into competitive Rocket League, whether they're GC or SSL, looking to push into, create a team around that sort of area, what advice do you have for some of these guys who are looking to get into competitive Rocket League?
Play. I think Reynolds has a really good video on it as well. Mm-hmm. Just where he did an interview with a high schooler and just talking about it. It's like committing to any competition is a lot of sacrifices. I mean, for me personally, this was when I was working with Crimson Wings at the time, I think was the team, which was Democat Skills and Prime. And then eventually it turned into me working with Novus AV /11/ what obviously became Furia.
Yeah.
Last season. My schedule with balancing life was awful. Like it would be, I'd go to classes for 4 or 5 hours a day. And then I'd commit to being a better coach and being better at this game for 8-10 hours a day. And that was it. I'd balance school. I'd get homework done. I'd get college done. I wouldn't go out. I wouldn't be a huge social butterfly. But there was that mentality to go, okay, I don't care. Like if I'm having personal successes, if I'm working toward goals, that's what motivates me. Whereas I probably missed out on a lot of stuff. So I wasn't the most social. I wasn't going out. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Dedicating my time properly, and it probably cost me a few relationships looking back.
Yep.
But I guess you can argue maybe those relationships aren't worth it if that person's not understanding. But there's also that selfish aspect of, okay, I personally am not dedicating the time either. So can you really fault them for not wanting to commit the time? But I don't know. Committing to any competition, getting the work-life balance is the hardest thing.
Yep.
Especially when you're on the come up. And something you talked about, like obviously the younger kids have the time. Once you're at my age or your age, it's like, damn, we don't have the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard. You have to make sacrifices. You have to balance. And I'm sure there's even the 14, 15-year-olds, like, they regret. They can't go out with their friends on weekends. They can't go out at nights because they're scrimming 2-3 hours a day and they have to play another 2-3 hours in free play and ranked and six-man, whatever, right? It's not easy as just, like, play. Like, there is a lot of sacrifices, and you have to be aware of that and just know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something you're willing to commit to it. But don't go in naive, just like, I can make this work.
Yep.
And I just have to pick up and play, because it's not that easy. That's probably the best advice.
No, I think that's golden, mate. I think that's golden for a lot of people. Because I think it's one of the real ones. You know, it's a real fact. Sacrifices do need to be made with esports, especially if you are looking to be a player. Bit different if you're looking to do other stuff in the esports domain, like you know, AHA or any of that sort of stuff. But yeah, especially for a player, you need to have those considerations and understand, you know, if it doesn't come through, if it doesn't come to fruition, if you don't be a pro player, what do you have to do to fall back on? What sort of other pathways can you take and sort of work around? And I think that's a really important thing to consider as well, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I did college, because I had that as the backup.
Yep.
I don't know. I believed in myself, but it was kind of like, you got to prepare for the worst as well.
For sure.
But yeah, it is what it is. You live and learn. Some things come off and some don't, but just having that confidence to know what you're going to do. Like, I don't know. A lot of people don't prepare for the future, which is wild to me. Or, like, don't have backup plans. Like, even people I'm friends with, it's like, I don't know how you're not nervous riding that line. Like, I always like to have a backup plan of, like, if this goes wrong, what am I going to do?
Yeah. For sure.
Different people.
Different beasts.
They're just different, man.
They're just built different. Awesome. Fantastic. I really appreciate it, Nick. I think it's a phenomenal insight to a lot of people who are, you know, considering that and considering that pathway, for sure. Definitely. Now, for everyone listening, for all the guys listening on Spotify, Apple, all the podcast platforms you can listen to, MindClickers, even on YouTube, where can we find you on all of your fantastic socials?
That's why I was just pulling up on my second monitor, actually, because I got to know this. My Twitter is at NickOnRL, and I don't think I use any other platforms. No, I don't stream. I don't use. Is there even any other apps? Twitch, Twitter.
Insta? You got an Insta?
Bro, I don't use my Insta. That's my personal stuff.
Gotcha.
YouTube, I don't upload. Coaches can't do content. What else? It's literally just my Twitter, at NickOnRL.
Okay. Legendary. Well, that's pretty easy for everyone listening to find it. I'll chuck some links in the episode as well, so that'll be nice and accessible. But look, Nick, fantastic episode. I really appreciate you coming on. A lot of fantastic insights and sort of information that a lot of people might not have known about you, and also, I guess, about your mindset towards Rocket League coaching, but also coaching, you know, everyday life. And I guess your goals and individual motivations that sort of strive you to be who you want to be and that journey that you take. So I think it's phenomenal. And I really appreciate you jumping on, brother.
Man, this is fun. We'll have more conversations, whether it be in London or Dallas or wherever.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe Saudi Arabia.
What do you mean? We'll figure it out. See what happens.
It's all love, brother. Man, this is imagine me 2 years ago would have been like, man, I'm not getting interviewed for anything. I was a lengthy random. And now this is just unreal how everything's progressed.
For sure, brother. Anytime. Make sure that you enjoy your day, and I'll catch everyone in the next episode.
Peace out.
Peace.